that I have my own Trump photography story, just very briefly. In 2016, I had a private meeting with Donald Trump in Kissimmee in Florida, just before he spoke at a rally. And I went into the room and he said, "Let's get a picture." I said, "Mr. Trump, you do know who I am, don't you?" He said, "Yeah, let's get a picture." I like this guy. And we sat down and we talked about vaccines and autism, and he said, "Stop. You don't need to tell me that vaccines cause autism." He said, "I've experienced it personally." And we talked for the next 50 minutes about that subject. Now, I've talked to a lot of politicians on both sides of the aisle since I testified before Congress in 2000, 2001, and most of them cannot get you out of the room quick enough. Looking at their watches and their cell phones, they have no interest at all, because what is at stake is the dollars that they will get from the pharmaceutical company for their campaign, should they get involved. And as Laurie has summarized, my career as a gastroenterologist came to an abrupt halt when I put the concerns about the patient and the patient's family above those of public health policy in the pharmaceutical industry. And it wasn't a brave or clever decision, it was simply the way I was raised in medicine. That's what doctors are there for. And that clearly conflicted with some very, very big agendas. But that's okay. That's okay. And so my career in medicine came to an end, and I came to this great country in 2004 in political and professional exile. And I went to live in the great state of Texas. And I set up a center there for caring for children with autism, combining research, education, and medical intervention to see if we could get the best for these children. Eventually, they caught up with me there and they accused me of scientific fraud and all kinds of things, which you can destroy a career of a scientist or a physician in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, that's all it takes. It takes a lifetime, if ever, to build that back up again, to change the mindset, particularly when they control the media. And at that time, the cancel culture was unheard of. This was their first foray into that cancel culture. And it was highly effective, until what had happened over the years, people had come to me from the pharmaceutical industry, from government agencies, federal agencies responsible for vaccine safety, and had said, "We have done a terrible thing. We believe we can trust you, so here is the evidence." So I had some extraordinary stories. Then I decided to become a filmmaker and become their worst enemy and tell these stories. What I want to talk to you briefly about today is the power of film. The power of film to change people's minds. You tell a story and you entertain people first and educate them second, get them sitting forward in their seats, they will listen. And Americans par excellence understand film. The first film we made was Who Killed Alex Spordalakis, and it's not a story you would have heard much about. But we got called in to help with a child in Chicago, a very big autistic child who was violent. The mainstream medical system, not understanding autism at all, had put him on 28 psychotropic medications, each one being given to offset the side effects of the last one, and each one making him more and more violent. He was mute, he was frustrated, he was angry, and he would have the most terrible meltdowns. His mother and his godmother continually had black eyes, bruises, cuts from his violent assault on him. And that was a direct consequence of the drugs. We were called in when he was locked in 4-point lock restraints, chained to a hospital bed for a total of 80 days, naked and drugged to the eyeball. We got him out of there, we took him to New York, we got him scoped because he had inflammatory bowel disease, we got his bowel disease treated and things started to improve. He went back to Chicago, and here's the problem, that his mother and her husband were estranged, she had nowhere to live, and so she was going from hotel to motel with this boy, and every time he He heard a siren, of which there are many in Chicago. He thought that they were coming to take him away again, to chain him up, to drug him again. He would have a meltdown, he would destroy the room, and they would be thrown out and have to move on to the next hotel or motel. In the end, he fell back into the hands of the psychiatrists. We heard about him when he was in Lutheran Pediatric Intensive Care Unit. We went to see him there, and once again, they chained him to the bed in four-point lock restraints, and he was on two intravenous and one intramuscular sedation given as an anesthetic for horses. He was still bending the frame of the bed. Halfway through the week, his insurance ran out. He took his restraints off, they took his IV out, and they put him on the street. That is American medical care at its best. 1 week later, he was dead. His mother, in desperation, had stabbed him to death and tried to take her own life, as had his godmother. And so the media portrayed this story as this crazy mother who hated her deranged child, or her severely autistic child, and this was terrible. It was all her fault, and that's how this was portrayed. And that's how it would have stayed, and she would have been in Cook County maximum security, and she was going to be prosecuted with aggravated murder. That meant no parole. You were in prison for life. 4 years later, after we'd made a film about this and released Who Killed Alex Bordelakis, the irony in the title being, who actually killed this child? I got a call from her lawyer in Chicago. He said, I got a call from the state's prosecutor, the person in Chicago, in Illinois, who was responsible for putting her in prison and keeping her there for the rest of her life. And the state's prosecutor said, we have heard that there is a film that has been made about this story, we'd like to see it. So I sent him my DVD, and he called me 2 weeks later. This is her lawyer talking to me. He said, I called her 2 weeks, they called me back 2 weeks later and said, we can no longer prosecute this case in the same way. She will be released from prison next week. And that is the power of film. Without that, it would have been this crazy mother. When they saw that, they saw the truth. This is not in any way advocating the murder of children or suicide. It is about the ability of film to tell the truth and change the course of history. That was the first time that had ever happened in the American legal system. The second film we made was called Vax. Who's heard of Vax? Vax changed the world. For several reasons. One, it was the first time ever that we had had an insider from the CDC, from the vaccine office, a senior scientist responsible for designing, enacting a study, collecting the data, analyzing the data, coming forward and saying, we have done a terrible thing. We tested your hypothesis that age of exposure to measles, mumps, rubella vaccine is a risk for autism, and we found that it was absolutely true. And for 14 years, we hid that, we destroyed the documents, and we allowed American children to go to the war, who suffer from permanent, serious, intractable neurological injury. That is one of the worst humanitarian crimes of all time. Because even Hitler and Pol Pot did not pretend that they were your friends. This was hypocrisy at its very worst. And so we got that film into Tribeca Film Festival, and many of you will know this story, and this was the best thing that could possibly have happened. It was censored. It was accepted on its merits by Robert De Niro, who has a vaccine-injured child with autism, and then it was censored because the pharmaceutical industry interests on Wall Street said, who sponsored that festival said, no. Robert De Niro went on to the Today Show and Good Morning America 3 days later, and he said, we should not have done that. Should have played that film. Everybody should be able to make up their own mind. Everybody needs to see that movie. It exploded worldwide. And censorship completely backfired. Everybody became aware of the film. And that film, more than anything else, changed the entire landscape of this vaccine safety debate. Because it wasn't my opinion. It wasn't Del Victory's opinion. It was the opinion, it was the fact from an insider from the CDC himself. Then we made the last film, and that is called 1986, The Act. And that is really a story about why we are here, where we are in the world today. And it's about the 1986 Act, signed into law by Ronald Reagan, which took away liability from the pharmaceutical industries for death and damage caused by their vaccines. It was one that he was reluctant to sign, but it is at the root of all of the problems that we face today. How many people here before COVID-19 knew that this industry had no liability for death and damage done by the vaccine? And if you did, a lot of you didn't. This is the problem. What happened when they did, as Laurie said, it gave them the perfect business model. They had a mandatory market. Children had to get their vaccines to go to school and no liability. All they could do was make a massive profit. And when they realized that, they increased the number of vaccines on the market dramatically. With more and more trivial conditions, conditions that they can try, it didn't matter because they had no liability. And what that did is it made them so rich, so wealthy, so powerful that they could buy governments, they could buy politicians, they could write policy, that they bought the medical journals, they determined what would be published and what wouldn't be published, they bought medical training, they owned the doctors, they bought the media, they owned the editorial, they owned the headline. You couldn't publish anything that ran against the pharmaceutical industry narrative. CNN, Anderson Cooper are paid by the pharmaceutical companies. That's where they get their money. It's the bottom of the show afterwards. They became extraordinarily powerful. And this wasn't just in America. This was a global policy. And that allowed them to do what they've done with the COVID vaccines, to create any form of narrative they like. And they have been joined in that mission by people like Tony Fauci, who has made their jobs so much easier and so much more profitable. But one thing they could never own, one thing they will never own, are the hearts and minds of the American people. So we are now in a situation where a minority of Americans have had both doses of the COVID vaccine and will never have that vaccine. In other words, those majority, that majority are anti-vaxxers by the mainstream media narrative. We're now about to make another film, and then I will finish. We're meant to make a very, very powerful film, and this is nothing trivial. In fact, it was co-written by me and Terry Rossio. Who, you'll say? His wife is standing just there. I'll be very careful what I say. Terry Rossio wrote little-known films like Aladdin and Shrek and Pirates of the Caribbean, Deja Vu, and the latest Kong versus Godzilla SmackDown. So this is a man who is at the top of his game. And this is a very, very powerful film. And I need you to get behind this film. It needs to be made. So I need associate producers. And I know you're out there. And I want you to come and see me afterwards. I'll be at the booth. Please support our efforts. Thank you very much.